Shalom, everyone. This is Elliot Schoenberg, International Director of Placement for the Rabbinical Assembly. Welcome to Chodesh Tov, a monthly 10-minute podcast that is a joint venture of the Schechter Rabbinical School in Jerusalem, the Ziegler School of Rabbinic Studies in Los Angeles, the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York, the Conservative Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, and the International Rabbinical Assembly. The purpose of these podcasts is to regularly inform rabbis in the field of new comings and goings in a variety of fields of Jewish studies. Our guest presenter today is Rabbi Rob Scheinberg, rabbi of the United Synagogue of Hoboken, and who served previously on our Rabbinical Assembly Committee for Machzor Lev Shalem, and now is a member of the Sidur Lev Shalem Committee. He often teaches at JTS Liturgy. It's my pleasure today to represent our presenter, Rob Scheinberg.
Thanks very much, and thanks for inviting me to present today. I'm especially interested in Jewish liturgy, and one special area of interest for me is how Jewish liturgy functions politically. We all know one function, maybe the major function of Jewish liturgy, is to give us a language to connect to God. But just as much, Jewish liturgy gives us a language to connect to each other. It's a way that the Jewish community defines Jewish values, establishes communal norms and limits, and also broadcasts Jewish ideas to Jews and to the rest of the world. And we have many examples of passages from Jewish liturgy that function on a political level in addition to the various other levels that liturgy can function. For example, we have the emphasis on Triat HaMetim in the second bracha of the Amidah. It appears to have been a way for those who supported the doctrine of Triat HaMetim to promote that doctrine and to differentiate themselves from those who rejected that doctrine. Maybe the best known example of the political use of liturgy is the prayer for the government, about which I'd like to share some thoughts in this podcast. I'm grateful to be summarizing some of the research from Barry Schwartz and Jonathan Sarna, who've written articles on this topic that will be linked from the Rabbinical Assembly website. Now, I've adopted a custom in my community that I do shortly before July 4th every year. My synagogue owns a set of huge machzorim that was printed in Lithuania in 1914. So on the Shabbat before July 4th, I bring one of these volumes to the bima. I show it to the congregation. I carefully turn its yellowed, crumbling pages until I get to the prayer for the government, which is recited right after the Torah reading and Haftarah. In this prayer book, that prayer reads as follows. Hanoten shu'alim lachim u'memshala l'nesechim. May God who grants salvation to kings and dominion to rulers. Malchuto malchut kol olamim, whose kingdom is a kingdom spanning all eternity. Hapotzei David avdo mi'cherev ra'ah, hanoten bayam derech u'vamayim azim netiva. Who releases David, his servant, from the evil sword and places a road in the sea and a path in the mighty waters. Hu yivarech v'yishmor v'insor v'azor v'romem v'gadel v'nasei l'mala. May he bless, protect, guard, assist, elevate, exalt, and lift upwards. And I'll just read this next part just in Hebrew. Et Adonenu HaKesar Nikolai Alexandrovich v'edisto HaKesarit HaKvuda Alexandra Fedorovna v'epanam HaYoresh HaEtzer Alexei Nikolaevich v'et imo HaKesarit HaKvuda Maria Fedorovna v'et kol Beit Malkenu Haram Yarum Hodam. And just continuing just in English, may the King of Kings in his mercy give them life, protect him, save him from every trouble, woe, and injury. May nations submit under his feet, may his enemies fall before him, and may he succeed in whatever he endeavors. May the King of Kings in his mercy grant compassion in his heart and the heart of all his advisors to do favors for us and for all Israel, our brethren. Lasot tovot imanu. In his days and our days, may Judah be saved, may Israel dwell securely, and may the Redeemer come to Zion, uva l'tzion goel. Chen yehi ratzon v'namar amen. So I share this to my community, and even if they remember it from last year, they just find it to be so comical. You remember in Fiddler on the Roof, someone says, is there a blessing for the Tsar? And yes, there's a blessing for the Tsar, whoever the ruler happened to be, in traditional Siddurim. And over the course of five centuries, hundreds of Siddurim have included a version of this prayer with the names of the current leader or leaders inserted. The idea of saying a prayer for the government is as old as the Tanakh itself. We read in the prophet Jeremiah, chapter 29, that says, God, seek the welfare of the city to which I have exiled you. And we know the famous words of Pirkei Avot in the third parak, second Mishnah, Rabbi Chinina Sgan HaKohanim Omer, Heve Min Palel Bishlama Shal Machut, Sha'um Alei Mora'a, pray for the welfare of the kingdom, for were it not for the fear of the kingdom, man would swallow his neighbor alive. The idea of such a prayer for the government is cited in the Abudraham, 13th century Spanish codification of prayer customs, but there's no specific text that is indicated. But the particular form of the prayer for the government in my Machzorim from Vilna, that begins with the words Hanoten Shua, this, which is the most popular form of this prayer, appears to be from the period either immediately before the exile of Jews from Spain or immediately thereafter. Now, why did Jews say prayers like this? One objective could have been to curry favor with the king as a recognition that no matter how a king may respond to the Jewish people, a strong king, even a moderately anti-Jewish one, was better for the Jews than a weak king who would be overcome by the raging mob. But many observers understand prayers like this as an example of the political use of liturgy rather than as an authentic expression of religious devotion. This prayer is recited and printed in the prayer book simply to ensure that no one is going to accuse the Jews of disloyalty. When you string together so many synonyms, may he bless, safeguard, preserve, help, exalt, make great, extol, and raise high, it sounds like it's a moment of public relations in the middle of the davening rather than authentic expression of religious devotion. And it's also hard to imagine the Jewish communities that had been terrorized by Tsar Nicholas II and the previous Tsars would have prayed without irony, V'yiposonav v'fanav, may his enemies fall before him. After all, who were those enemies? They were us. So some commentators have noted the ironic nature and even a darkly comic nature to some of the lines in Hanoten Shua. There's such an overwhelming emphasis in this prayer to God's dominion over all, even kings and princes, as if to say, we're forced to express our fealty to this temporal king, but we are also truly expressing our loyalty to Melech Malchei HaMelechim. And the final words being Uvalitzion Goel, that indicates that our ultimate prayer is actually for us to be liberated from the reign of this particular ruler and to be returned to our own land. And also, educated daveners would have been aware of the original context of some of the verses that are quoted in Hanoten Shua. So, for example, the first two citations are from Psalm 144. Hanoten Shua Limlachim Hapotzei David Abdo Mecherev Ra'a, to the one who gives victory to kings, who delivers his servant David from the deadly sword. Well, what's the verse that immediately follows this? 144, verse 11. Pitzeni v'atzileni miyad b'nei nechar, asher pihem diber shav, v'iminam yemin sheker. Deliver me, rescue me from the hands of foreigners whose mouths are full of lies, whose right hands are deceitful. And even though that following verse is not included in Hanoten Shua, likely it was on the minds of some people who were worshipping. One line toward the end of the prayer appears to be an utterly serious plea, and this is the one about may God grant compassion in the heart of the leader and the heart of his advisors, lasot tovot, to do favors or acts of goodness for us and for all Israel, our brethren, knowing that the supremely powerful monarch could do as he wished with the Jewish people. The only hope for the Jewish people was to pray for him to be compassionate, because the fate of the Jewish community depended not on rights, but on the tovot, on the favors that ruling authorities could choose to grant to them. In the second half of the 18th century, though, we know the situation began to change, and this prayer that summed up the relationship between Jewish communities and non-Jewish authorities quite well for hundreds of years started to not reflect that relationship as well. First, the change came in French synagogues, and after the French Revolution and the emancipation of the Jewish community, some synagogues began to recite a new form of a prayer for the government that was not focused on the king as an individual. But it was really in the United States that many Jews came to realize that their assumptions about their relationship with the government needed to be thoroughly revised. And we see evidence of these revisions in prayer customs and prayer books almost immediately after American independence. The Jewish community in colonial America was tiny, and in the New York area, the only synagogue at the beginning was Sha'arith Israel, the Spanish and Portuguese synagogue. Thankfully, that community, which as we know exists still today, preserved very good records of their liturgical practice. And soon after the Declaration of Independence, there was a change in liturgical practice at Cherith Israel. They didn't actually change the text of the prayer for the government, but they decided that henceforth, instead of standing up for the prayer, they would now sit down. And this itself communicates a difference about the model of government and the Jewish relationship to power, that in this new United States, Jews can respect the government without having to resort to flattery of its leaders. There's another American, early American siddur, a siddur of Solomon Henry Jackson, and this is from 1826. And it includes two different versions of the prayer, one version for when Congress is in session, and a different version for when Congress is on recess. And the difference is, when Congress is in recess, they're not your leaders, so they're not included in the list of people to pray for. This could be understood as an additional demonstration of a non-hierarchical and non-deferential relationship with the ruling authorities. When they're not actually at work, they're your neighbors. And additionally, the Jackson Siddur version includes a line of blessing of the people. What had always been a prayer for the king and a prayer for the government was being transformed into a prayer for the country. Most Orthodox Siddurim published in the United States have retained the traditional Hanotein Shua, but in the place where the name and title of the ruler would be mentioned, they would simply substitute the President of the United States. And in some cases, also the Vice President of the United States, maybe in a demonstration of a misunderstanding of the actual role of the Vice President. And this is what is indicated in the widely used American Orthodox Siddurim, the Birnbaum Siddur and the Curran Sachs Siddur. Though interestingly, the Art Scroll series of Siddurim appears not to include any prayers for the government at all. Over the centuries of Reform Judaism in the United States, there have been numerous different versions of the prayer for the United States, mostly written and recited in English and a wide, wide variety. It's interesting, though, that there's one version of the prayer for the government that has stood the test of time and has actually been reproduced very close to the original in every official conservative and Reconstructionist Siddur for the past 86 years. And this is the prayer of Rabbi Louis Ginsberg of the Jewish Theological Seminary. It was composed back in 1927 for the Festival Prayer Book, which is the first liturgical publication of conservative Judaism. And Ginsberg's prayer reflects a growing realization that the United States is a different kind of diaspora. And Jews in the United States are not an oppressed and barely tolerated minority, but rather are invited to be full partners in the society and come to the table to help to shape the policy and culture and values. So there's no reference to praying for merely that the rulers will show fairness and compassion to the Jews and do tovot, do favors for us. Rather, a prayer for the United States conveys that it's a society where the Jewish community is an integral and valued part, and that the society upholds, at least in theory and often in practice, values that we passionately uphold, like liberty for all people and tolerance of dissent. And the overwhelming agenda of Rabbi Ginsberg's prayer, which you can see by just counting the number of words and number of lines that are devoted to this idea, is to note that the United States is made up of diverse ethnicities and religions, and to pray that these different races and creeds will get along and establish a society based on tolerance and freedom. In fact, the original version of Rabbi Ginsberg's prayer uses a provocative formulation that was apparently not even translated, not even in 1927, and then was later removed from the prayer in later iterations. In the 1927 and 1946 Siddurim, we see a line that says, "Hamishtok akim lirotah or lechol hagoyim." Or fulfill the yearnings of all the people of our country to speak proudly in its honor and fulfill their desire to see it become a light to all nations. The use of this phrase, or goyim, or la goyim, not to refer to the Jewish people, but to refer to the United States, is remarkably notable. Then again, because it may have had connections to American exceptionalism, that may have been a reason why later iterations of this prayer in later conservative and Reconstructionist Siddurim removed this line. The prayers for the government have gone through so many different versions over the course of these last five centuries, and we can only wonder what the prayers for the government will look like in the future as the Jewish relationship with the surrounding society continues to evolve.
Rob, before we conclude, would you just give us the source citations for those two articles, if you would?
Certainly. The article by Jonathan Sarna is called Jewish Prayers for the U.S. Government, a study in the liturgy of politics and the politics of liturgy. It's found in a collection called Moral Problems in American Life, New Perspectives on Cultural History. It's also found in a more recent anthology of articles on Jewish liturgy, and there's a scan of it that I was able to find on the Brandeis website connected to Professor Sarna's website. The other article on Hanoten Shua is more of a historical survey of Hanoten Shua by Barry Schwartz. It was published in the Hebrew Union College Annual, and I don't have...
All right. That's great. Okay, those sources will be on the RA website. I'd like to thank Rob Scheinberg for this enlightening and very exciting conversation. I'd like to wish everyone Chodesh Tov. This is Elliot Schoenberg, the Director of Placement for the Rabbinical Assembly. Thank you for joining us.